Welcome to Season 9, Episode 21 of RPG Circus, the greatest show in gaming. In this episode, we discuss urban fantasy. We also lament over downsizing your gaming collection. Again, welcome to Season 9, Episode 21 of RPG Circus. My name, of course, is Jeff, and joining me in this episode is Chris and Paul. Welcome, gentlemen.
Hello.
Greetings.
First up, I'd like to apologize to all our listeners. There was some stuff that just cropped up last week, and I was just not able to pull it together to record.
It happens.
Yeah.
Hey, it's all good, man. We're among friends.
Yeah, that said, I'm also looking at the schedule, and I think, basically, we're going to squeeze out maybe two more episodes before the end of the year.
Sounds about right.
Yeah. So my thought is probably we will record in about 3 weeks, and then 2 weeks after that, and then that will be it for the year.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Sounds like something that's got to happen.
Yeah. There's just no way. End of the year is always bad for us.
Yep.
You know, I mean, we'll actually get 23 episodes out that way, which isn't bad. I mean, there's only...
Wouldn't it be 24? No, 23. Yep.
Yeah,
you're
23.
Right. Sorry.
Yeah, I'm actually being able to do the math right today.
Yay.
So, you know, it's just one of those things. I mean, sometimes I think we've gotten 25. I think 1 year we actually got 26, but typically we're lucky to get 20, 23 is typical.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. Well, again, we went pretty solid for a long time. It's just the fall stuff gets in the way.
Yep. So... No biggie. We'll do a little news because there is some news items, shall we? Let's begin. First off, of course, is, well, Frank Metzer's, how is that pronounced? Imperia Fantasy Setting? Is that what that was?
Sure.
Imperia?
Yeah, I think it is, yes.
Yeah. That has been canceled, and I guess the latest word is it's not going to be restarted?
Yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Well... I did a little research after I heard about this just because of a morbid curiosity, and I realized why the name rang a bell. He's the guy that wrote the Red Box set back in the day.
Yep.
He literally started my love of gaming, so I got a lot of respect for the man. But, well, I don't know what to say, but I wish him well if he tries again.
Well, and maybe shoot for a slightly less ambitious goal than $250,000 for... what appeared to be pretty much another fantasy setting.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I think that was my major problem with it. It's like I couldn't justify spending money on another fantasy setting.
Yeah. Well, I finally heard about the setting itself. Like, he was on another podcast, and it sounds good, but not $250,000 good.
Right.
You know, so I'm going to wish him well. And when he wants to do it again, feel free to come on our show. We'll be more than happy to listen to you.
Yeah.
And your fascinating life career.
Okay. And the other thing we got going on is, of course, this week, November 10th through the 12th, is EtherCon, the online tabletop RPG convention.
Yep. Hers.
So that is still available for people to do, which is cool.
Yep. I'll be going there on Friday and let you know how it goes out.
Yeah, cool. Anything else we need to cover?
Well, other than finding something, a silly little game about bears and heisting that was basically a one-page scenario, not really. So let's get on to the topic.
Okay. Oh, I know. One piece of weird news just for people, just because I've been bored.
Okay.
I actually fired up a BBS. An old-school,
right.
honest-to-God
That's
BBS.
Right, yeah.
You know, you can actually telnet to it at bbs.rpgcircus.com port 2323, not the standard telnet port, but 2323. I've just been fucking around with it. There's nothing serious there. I'm actually creating a little RPG Circus forum message base if anyone's ever interested. I usually log in once a day just for the hell of it. I'm also in the middle of linking it up to FidoNet, which is an old school message network.
That's interesting.
Sounds fun, actually, in its own, you know.
Yeah, the biggest problem is it's run on Linux, and I can't really get the DOS, due to the way the server that it's on, I can't really get the DOS door games to actually work, which is a shame, because I would love to run me some Usurper and some other stuff on there.
Oh, man. I haven't played a Mux in a long time, but that sounds fun.
Yeah, so, I mean, if I might get it to work at some point, but it's there for fun. And honestly, like I said, I log in every day for fun. And it's on, you know, there's a couple of message networks that right now I'm on. It will have three message networks eventually. Right now I'm on this experimental one called FSXNet, and then I'm on DoveNet, and then I'm going to hopefully be on FidoNet with at least some message bases, probably not all of them. So just for fun, you know, and just for shits and giggles, I think I'm going to be uploading the episodes up there, you know, the latest episodes up there. So you can log in and download just for the hell of it.
Nice.
I know. Just weird. That's it for that. So why don't we get into the first topic, which is urban fantasy.
Okay.
Sure. Well, I guess the reason I thought it might be kind of a cool topic is because, well, kind of around Halloween, which almost is the personification of urban fantasy in a lot of ways, because, you know, it was considered the Day of All Saints at a mysterious time, you know, basically a weird supernatural and possibly commercialism at the same time. And it is, urban fantasy is one of those weird campaigns that originally almost started as horror, but then it kind of lost the fear and became more of almost a power fantasy or weird things. It's a way of combining your typical fantasy genre with the modern day era. And we all know of a lot of games that we'll be talking about shortly about this. But I guess my first question to you guys is, what does urban fantasy mean to you guys?
Oh, wow. That could go into a lot. That can go a lot of different ways.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, I mean, it's such a broad subject. I mean, I think in terms of when I think urban fantasy, it sounds weird. I think of a couple of different TV series usually. You know, for better or worse, things like Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Angel come to mind.
Oh, absolutely. They're almost the personification of such.
Yeah. And then, of course, you know, if you go into books and obviously TV series, there is shit. It's coming. It's at the top of my head. I can't think of it.
What, like the Dresden Files?
Dresden Files. There you go. That's another one. Kind of comes to mind. Although that's more of a, it's an urban fantasy with a noir twist.
Oh, absolutely. And
I tend to think of the first thing I think of when I hear urban fantasy is actually literature, and specifically the, a lot of the kind of the urban fantasy that borders on the literature focused at women. I don't want to use the chick lit term because apparently that's not accurate, but that's what I think of about a lot of when I think of urban fantasy. And then, you know, like you said, Dresden Files, but also stuff like The Originals or Vampire Diaries, which are a little more soap opera-esque. Mm-hmm. So I guess I think of a little more drama in it than perhaps like the Dresden Files and things like that.
I don't know why all of a sudden what came to mind was the old Dark Shadows, which was really more drama than anything else. It just had some fantasy elements.
Would that be urban fantasy? I suppose, I mean,
At the time, it was sort of.
Well,
it was contemporary.
If you watch it, though, it does have a very, it feels like they could be just taking that from like the late 19th century for the level of technology involved in a lot of it. But yeah, that's interesting. I never thought about it that way. But yeah, that would be urban fantasy, too.
In a warped way. Yeah.
That's kind of why I say that in many ways it's almost horror defanged, because some of the earliest experiences I had were essentially taking the original 30s Universal horror movie monster things and softening them. Like one of the first ones, examples of it, which is incredibly silly because you have these two schmucks running around, is of course Abbott and Costello meets Frankenstein, where it's a modern era for that time, but it's played totally tongue in cheek, and it therefore loses its horror aspects but keeps the horror trappings.
Interesting, yeah.
Yeah, you know, I guess that is interesting. There is a lot of horror movie. I mean, horror movies that are, they're horror, but you could almost, depending on how they play, they could be considered urban fantasy.
Mm-hmm. Like, you know? I would argue the personification in gaming of urban fantasy is World of Darkness, of course.
Well, yeah, oh, that's probably very true, especially with everything they have in there, you know, between vampire, changeling,
mummy, werewolf,
mage,
all that stuff.
Oh, absolutely. And it doesn't necessarily just have to have horror aspects there. Like, it's just a matter of taking a magical element. Like, you could argue that a good chunk of steampunk follows similar tropes, but I want to stick within the modern era because, you know, it has different elements in different situations here. And often one of the key questions to ask is, how much magic do you want in your game? Because is magic an all-powerful substance that basically hides behind the scenes and everybody's in denial? Or has it become a fact of life right next to your car in your six-shooter? Like, you can range from secret societies, which we talked about in the past, where it could play an incredibly prominent role in an urban fantasy game. Like, who are the puppet masters?
Oh, I guess, I mean, I was just thinking, you could almost say that in many ways, I mean, again, TV series, you could argue that The X-Files was kind of urban fantasy.
Yep, absolutely. Because they were doing the Monster of the Week, and they had to come from somewhere, and yes, they were creepy, but Mulder and Scully, for the most part, were never in danger, despite them investigating all this stuff. You know, of course, there's exceptions to every rule, but generally speaking, if they sign their 3-year contract, you know, they're not going to kill them outright anytime soon.
So, would you consider X-Files a little more urban science fantasy than actual urban fantasy? I guess when I think of the word strictly just fantasy, I think of magic and stuff like that, whereas I think X-Files was a little bit more of the urban science fantasy. Aliens, psychic powers, weird tech, that kind of stuff. I mean, it might be a subdivision of a subdivision of a sub-niche, but I don't recall much in terms of magic or, you know, like you mentioned, the classic B-monsters or the movie monsters in there, so.
Oh, absolutely. Like, in many ways, you know, the conspiracy they tried to stick with were the ones that were a little bit more, I won't say it's totally grounded in fantasy, but while they did it eventually, every so often had like a demon or magic thing. For the sci-fi, like almost felt like a next generation of something like Atomic Horror or the 50s B movies kind of brought up 30 years later in the 90s.
Yep.
And having to deal with all the associated stuff that they had to cover up for the last 30 years.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, the end of the earth or it came from another world actually did happen. It just nobody knew about it because these guys covered it up.
Yeah, exactly.
I can see that for sure. And that's kind of why sometimes I refer to this genre as my pseudonym is action horror. You know, for a lot of these elements here. Like, but it doesn't necessarily just have to have strictly, you know, horror elements when you think about it. Like, you know, of course, you could combine, like, probably one of the more prominent ones in the last bit is probably Modern D20's Urban Arcana, where they basically said, okay, we got a bunch of fantasy races, let's put them in the modern era. Which actually was beaten by Shadowrun, which, even though it's a near future, it's kind of, well, it's a kitchen sink setting, let's be honest. But they combine the fantasy of the magic and the technology and the weird cultural traits with that cyberpunk-level technology of that era. And it's almost near future urban arcana when you think about it.
Well, one of the ones you mentioned in here is Harry Potter. There aren't really any elements of horror in the core setting of Harry Potter. There are elements of horror in the stories, but that's more a little more dramatic than actual a core element of the setting itself.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that always strikes me about Harry Potter is that if you're ever going to use these type of, you know, settings for a game or something like that, you need to decide on your limitations. Harry Potter is one of those settings that I don't think there's any coherent magical system defined. And so you would end up doing a lot of off-the-cuff rulings that would eventually become a book unto itself, I think, in order to try to use the Harry Potter setting.
I can see that. And yeah, Harry Potter is basically a boarding school cross with a Wizards Academy.
Right.
And because of that, one of the side effects of it is you'd be going to school. Not unlike mm-hmm. Buffy, where you find out, hey, I'm the Chosen. Now I got to deal with all this crap, but I'm still in high school.
Yep.
And that could always be an element, is often you're going to school at the same time as dealing with the high strangeness, which can cause its own turmoils and tribulations. You know,
well, it's an element of added drama to the setting is what it is.
Yeah. Because, yes, I just beat the big bad, but damn it, I better pass that test or I'm screwed.
Vampire Diaries would be very similar, too.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And also sometimes, I guess the other question is, how open is your magic system? Like, one of my favorite, I don't know if it's a true urban fantasy, but I'm going to bring it up anyway, is GURPS Technomancer, where they work under the assumption that the first atomic test was actually an opening of magical energy on the planet. And so magic and technology kind of coexisted side by side during the Cold War. And a lot of crazy ideas and chimerization of people and so forth happened in the name of kind of balancing science and technology. Like Oppenheimer's legendary words was actually a mantra, but he didn't realize it at the time. You know, and really adds, you know, and then you have Vietnam with dragons, which is kind of cool in its own right.
Well, you know, I mean, I guess if you do that, then you, I mean, if you count some of that, you almost have to count a lot of the weird war stuff from Savage Worlds.
Oh, absolutely. They're taking World War, and then suddenly they throw a heavy dose of magic in it and hope it sticks. Yeah, and
because they have, you know, World War One, World War Two, Vietnam. Mm-hmm. So.
Oh, absolutely. And, a certain war story.
They're not quite modern, but they're pretty, I mean, well, and they're not, and the funny thing is that's more modern fantasy than, I mean, it's weird because it's like there's modern fantasy and there's urban fantasy. What's the difference? In a way.
Yeah.
Well, I think, I think that's a kind of an academic point that probably someone's written a book about and maybe gotten a master's degree on, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
Who wasted their time. No.
Yeah. Oh, hey, man. Everybody needs a hobby. We have ours, and that's part of the fun. But yeah, like, I guess the first question I have to ask is, like, what sort of magical element do you want to put in the game? Like, it could be as simple as, hey, look, I bought a castle. I bought these statues. I put them above the clouds because I read this weird obscure thing. Oh, look, there's Disney's Gargoyles, probably one of the greatest urban fantasy settings of all time. Because you now have these out-of-time monsters that are the heroes in a world where magic is behind the scenes thanks to the Children of Oberon. But at the same time, there's most of the stuff is relatively real world for the first bit until they really start getting into the weird science and they start really playing up some of the aspects. Plus, like, where else can you have essentially a siege against Oberon? Because you got to use both magic and technology to survive it. And then it ultimately ends up as a deal. So I guess the question is, how fighty is your game and how much are you going to have to use your wits?
Yeah, I think working out a coherent magic system is probably something before you descend into one of these games, especially if you're just going to use something like GURPS Technomancer or, D20 Modern Urban Arcana. You'll want to make sure that you kind of really work out as the GM in your head beforehand, how much is this going to affect your setting? Should you have, if you have someone who can create gold from lead or whatever, you need to figure out how your money system is going to work for that.
Absolutely.
If you have someone who can teleport things, that's huge. I mean, that can change entire industries. So, yeah.
Well, I was just thinking, it's funny because Solomon Kane, while not a modern fantasy, had some of the same basic questions. You know, they were like, well, because if you look at their spell system, while it's very similar to what's in Savage Worlds, there's a lot of spells that have been left off because it's not appropriate to the setting.
Okay.
You know, like, for example, there are no bolt spells or blast spells of any type.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they do have like the fear spell and some other stuff, but they, you know, some of the major none of the damage or even healing spells actually exist in the setting.
Interesting.
You know, they made other choices to reinforce the level of magic they want in the system in terms of what spellcasters can do, but there's almost like no real direct damage spells at all.
Okay. Well, that's what the firearm's for anyway.
Yeah. But I'm just saying, it's interesting that you were having that conversation because that's the same design decision that you have to make. It's like what fits in the setting.
Yes.
Right. Well, that certainly changes the feel. I mean, that's actually a really interesting concept to leave those spells out and say to, you know, having the GM section and possibly even the player section, like, there are no damage spells for magic users. Magic users can do a limited range of things, and the rest of the space in the game is occupied by firearms or by people with swords. And I think that creates a distinctive feel for your game instead of, you know, just kitchen sinking everything. Like, yes, we have magical swords and wizards who can, you know, call down comet storms and stuff like that. So, yeah.
Oh, it's not that, you know, spell users are useless, but there are certain things that, you know, normally there's a lot of the what I would call high fantasy stuff that just doesn't happen.
Right.
Absolutely. And the other thing is how much even though your first couple episodes might be culture shock, you know, because you're finding out about this world underneath the world, it can't be the sole focus of the game because it's going to become mainstream the more you play the game. Like, one of my favorite movies of all times is, of course, Big Trouble in Little China. And that is literally an urban fantasy tale where this poor schmuck truck driver finds out about what happens under Chinatown.
Jack Burton.
You got it. Man of the Perk Job Express. Yeah. That would be a fun one-shotter.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Jack Burton would not be the same character if this was a season. By about the third or fourth episode, he'd at least be savvy enough to survive the darn thing. And even then, he didn't do that bad a job considering he was the fish out of water.
Right. And eventually you're not. I mean, you take like the TV series, like Buffy, eventually most of the characters were just like, yeah, this happens every Tuesday.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Once you get used to it, it's like, yeah. Now what?
Yeah, you're a vampire. What do you? No, I'm not. Yes, I lived in Sunnydale. Anyway.
Yeah, exactly. And that's when you get kind of almost a humor aspect from there because that's when you get crap like Scooby-Doo the Reluctant Werewolf where the characters have become so mundane that, yeah, it's spooky, but it's more funny spooky. Yeah. Like, or Funkadelic Frankenstein, which is that campaign I keep talking about, how you mix monster exploitation and do monsters who are essentially filling in minorities in the middle of the city because they're the impoverished. And that brings on a whole new different element and aspects. Like, I guess the other, and of course, one of my favorite movies of all time, Hellboy, which is almost another one of these personifications of urban fantasy because the main character is a myth.
Mm-hmm.
He is lovable. It took forever for him to grow up, and he's tough as hell, but, well, he's the devil. He's just a really nice devil.
Yeah.
You know? Or sometimes you mix other stuff. Like when I was talking about there, one of my favorite novel series is, of course, The Incantations of Immortality that was done by Piers Anthony.
Oh.
Where that literally is talking about everybody is essentially a god or an aspect and so forth. And each story is about the different god. But even when you take it back a couple of steps, it's still a technical wizard place, even when you take the gods out of there. Like, they're advertising magic and technology side by side on the advertisements. And sometimes the things you do are kind of aspects there. Like, I love the books. I don't think they're gameable unless you decide to go the full... Essentially, everybody's playing a god. It feels almost more like a board game. As you try to outmaneuver each other based on your aspects.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a fallacy that people fall into. It's like, this was a great book. It should make a great game.
No.
It's like, it's same thing with TV series and movies. Sometimes just like, yeah, that was
comic
great.
Comic books, same thing.
You're just like, nope, not going to be a good game.
No, like, if you're playing Ghost Rider, you either win or you don't. Because you're not, nobody plays Ghost Rider because he's essentially an I win button.
Yeah, most of your superheroes are like that. Doctor Strange, if you're talking about urban fantasy, is Doctor Strange is, you know, very much urban fantasy, but there is no limitations to his power. He can do anything. So there's no point in playing him or playing against him.
Yeah. Like, you'd almost have to play the sidekick of Cabal de Wizards to actually have anything that's sort of gameable.
Right.
Because you need to have fallibility and within the game itself, because... Or if you play on the DC side and you play the Sandman, you get into fights with Lucifer and Death, but it's more squabbles than anything else, and nobody's really a danger. It's just the mortals that get played with in the process.
I think Constantine would be a more gameable setting, as he has a pretty high attrition rate, so you have characters that kind of... that, you know, you might have a party that swirls around Constantine and his, you know, his conflicts with the various powers throughout the DC universe.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. But, and also, I'll be blunt, Constantine would be a lot like Doctor Who. He'd have to be an NPC out of necessity.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Because even though he's not the most powerful being in his planet, the way he plays is like a killer GM.
Yeah, you can't be his friend, because that's just putting a target on you. So yeah, oh,
absolutely. And also stuff in the narrative aspect when it comes to a lot of these great stories might not work. Like Wesley Wyndham Price and Angels, I would argue, is one of the most interesting story arcs in fiction. What happens with them? I don't know if any player they could actually play them. You know, play the entire arc without breaking it in some way, shape, or form.
Well, and I think a large portion of the first part of it would be kind of boring. I mean, if I'm remembering everything about him, he's kind of a librarian type guy. So until his transformation, he's almost the definition of an NPC.
Yeah, you know, he's comic relief until he gains a little leadership, screws everything up, becomes a badass, has the love of his life for literally less than an episode, and then breaks. That's a good story, but I guess you could play it, but I don't know if you'd have fun while doing so, unless you like your angst.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that's the problem, is that we sometimes forget that good fiction doesn't make for good gaming.
Yeah.
Right.
And vice versa.
Well, absolutely.
So, by the way, you do have one of my more favorite movies on the list.
Oh, which one?
I don't know why, but I always like the concept for Cast a Deadly Spell.
I absolutely love Cast a Deadly Spell since I've seen it.
Yeah.
It's an older movie, but the cast is amazing, and it's essentially the 50s with Lovecraftian horror backdrop.
Yeah.
What's the sequel? There's Cast a Deadly Spell and...
Oh, I know there's a sequel, but I don't think the sequel was that good.
It wasn't bad, but they switched out Fred Ward for... I can't remember his name now. Dennis Hopper.
Okay. Well, I like Dennis Hopper, but at the same time, the reason it worked so well is it was a film noir with magic.
Yeah.
And I'm just trying to see what the sequel is here, which I have no idea because I don't know what the sequel is. Okay, yeah. One sec.
I know there was one, but I don't... Well, yeah. I don't even know if it was technically a sequel.
I think it was, you might be right. It
okay, here we go. It says Witch sequel, Hunt. Witch Hunt.
Yeah.
Which I don't think I've ever seen.
Yeah.
I've seen it a couple times. It's not bad, but it's certainly not as good as Cast a Deadly Spell, that's for certain.
Oh, absolutely. And at the same time.
I guess my favorite line from Cast a Deadly Spell is when he meets the one woman and it's like, and he's like, yeah, I know you're no virgin. You know, because she was trying to chase down a unicorn earlier in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And again, like, the disposition between film noir and dealing with ill things and the magical aspects of the actual campaign itself makes for a damn good movie. And it's actually probably one of the more gameable ones, but another one of these ones where you'd have to talk to your party before you start.
Yeah.
You know, lay down the ground.
I think especially with Cast a Deadly Spell, so much of the magic is really just like minor technology replacement.
Absolutely.
Well, and even the major magic is more of a ritual than a off the cuff, I'm just going to, you know, call down the wrath of the gods. It's
right.
This big production, mm-hmm. which makes sense.
In fact, that probably makes urban fantasy more important, because otherwise you'd live in a fantasy game.
Right.
Really big magic has to be ritual based in order to have a longstanding influence on the actual planet itself, because one, it gives you something to fight, and one, it gives you something to collect for, thus providing a good story arc for you to deal with within the game itself. Yeah. And I don't know. I got a strange question to ask you guys.
Go for it.
Is Ghostbusters urban fantasy? Even though it doesn't have magic, but it does have supernatural aspects.
I would say it falls into the science fantasy aspect again.
Okay. I can see that.
Yeah.
Because
there's a lot of stuff that I've been thinking. It's like, well, that could fall in, but it's like, yeah, I agree that certain things were more science fantasy.
Mm-hmm. Like I said, that's kind of a semantic distinction. But, you know, when you're talking about, like, X-Files and, you know, Ghostbusters, there isn't a lot of wizards casting spells or things like that.
Yeah.
If there are, it's more of a ritualistic kind of thing, and it's usually a one-off more than a reproducible event. So I think science fantasy kind of describes some of those. And, I mean, there's no reason why you can't mix them. And, you know, there's no reason why you couldn't have mages in a Ghostbusters universe/game.
Yeah. Well, I always think of the Call of Cthulhu, where you had a bunch of cultists that were trying to raise Cthulhu from there. And, of course, one of the biggest, like I said, I absolutely love Ghostbusters. I love the anime show. I love the original movies. Even though I haven't seen the new one, I might see it once just out of morbid curiosity once I finally get off my ass and do it.
It was actually quite good.
Yeah, I was about to say, it was not a bad movie. I think it got a little more of a worse rap than people... I don't know.
Awful trailers. Well, those trailers made it look like it was a remake of the original, and it wasn't that at all.
Right.
Yeah. You're like the third person who recommended this movie for me, so I'll get back to you when I actually see it. But what I love about Ghostbusters is a bunch of four nerds basically went against a god with their toys. And again, it's the
No. Three nerds and an everyday man.
Yes. Okay, fair enough.
Remember, he said that I'll believe in anything as long as you pay me.
It has a paycheck, yeah. It has
a paycheck in it, exactly.
But I think they really missed a golden opportunity by not, for lack of a better term, franchising it out in order to actually send there. Because I know people who I've seen on the web who literally are cosplaying Ghostbusters in their particular region. Like, there's actually a Ghostbusters Chicago, for example.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, but the Ghostbusters RPG, that was the kind of the conceit was, is you were part of one of the franchises.
Yep.
It's been so long since I looked at that, I couldn't even tell you.
I'm just saying, it seems to me that was the case. It's like you were not playing the original Ghostbusters, you were playing, like, a group of people that were a Ghostbuster unit, if you will.
Yeah, basically, this is Peter's harebrained scheme that actually kind of paid dividends.
Right.
And now you're living what he wants to do because, you know, at this point they'd be old men or, you know. And that would be probably the most terrifying thing to fight is the original Ghostbusters when they finally die.
Yeah. Oh.
Well, you know, it was actually surprisingly not too bad of a movie. I mean, because there was the Ghostbusters cartoon, and then many, many years later, there was like some sort of like, I almost want to call it a spinoff series. It was
Yep. There was the real Ghostbusters, and I think it's called I want to say it's called the New Ghostbusters, but I could be wrong on that.
I think it's Extreme Ghostbusters.
Yes, I think
that could be it.
It's something like that. And surprisingly, that was not as bad as it sounded.
They were both really excellent series, actually. Yeah.
You know. I think there was just not enough, you know, call for it, you know, for people to say, oh, yeah, I want to watch this. It's like, well, the only people that are going to watch it are the people that probably watch the old TV series, maybe. You know, the old cartoon back when they were a kid.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, I don't think kids, newer kids, were that interested in seeing it.
I can see that. And I stand by Ghostbusters as one of the greatest monster manuals never released. You know, like, just some of the concepts that came up with both the anime shows and the TV show, you know, and the movies. Let's just say they did their homework, and I'll leave it at that.
Yeah.
But ultimately, I would recommend for any urban fantasy campaign, start small and work your way to big.
Yep.
Because just start with something really small. Make it a minor fetch quest and see if it builds on it. Like, the biggest details must start with a single step. And Okay, let's say you get a magic coin and you lifted it off a wizard. What happened next? And that's, what if it's like a ritual thing? What if it's the linchpin to keeping the Call of Cthulhu in there? What if it's, I don't know, an archmage's talisman or a lich's velocity? But the lich happens to be running Wall Street for the last 100 years, which would explain a lot, actually. And it's the juxtaposition between modern life and the strange, for lack of a better term, is what makes a good urban fantasy game. Like, for all the faults of Urban Arcana and Modern D20, some of their spins on it were kind of fun. Yep. Like, you take a drow and you name her Whippy. Like, it's kind of a stupid little name that sounds very conventional, but then you realize that's, you know, still a bloody drow, you know, wizard. It just happens to be the girl next door at the same time. You know, the monstrous in everyday life, as it were, if you don't play the magical aspects. Okay, so I guess...
Yeah, any final thoughts before we switch up?
No problem. I think I pretty much covered the basics here. I just thought it'd be a fun topic. And
oh, no, it is. I mean, we could go on for hours, honestly, I'm sure.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, I will say one thing is I was thinking of this, if they call it a miniseries, but it was only like 3 episodes, you know, how they do that. And it's not technically urban fantasy, but it is it's considered a science fiction, but it kind of reminded me, it was called The Lost Room. Any of you guys ever see that? It's on the Sci-Fi Network at one point.
I don't think so.
Sorry, man. Go for it.
The basic premise was, is the main character is a detective, and he ends up acquiring this key, I think, from some guy he was chasing. And the key, you stick it in any door, you open the door, and you go into this room that's some motel room from the 1960s.
I think I remember seeing a little bit about that.
Yeah, and the premise is that he loses his daughter in the room, so he's looking for these other objects that exist from... It all has to. It stemmed from some sort of weird event that happened at that motel room. That's just called The Event. I thought it was pretty good.
No, it sounds amazing. I look forward to. I'll try to hunt it down for next time.
Yeah,
you've now officially perked my curiosity, Jeff. Well done.
Yeah, I'll shoot you the link in the Wikipedia link in the notes for you.
Okey-dokey.
Yeah. Because it was just one of those weird ones. I'm like, well, that was cool. I mean, I like the concept. I like, you know, and I, you know, it's like people have these objects and they kind of randomly signal each other. So you can actually find other objects with other objects. And it's funny because certain objects by themselves don't do enough, but you can actually combine objects to do other things.
Magical synergy. I like it.
Yeah. So,
interesting.
I mean, yeah. I don't. It's not technically urban fantasy, but it's pretty. It teeters on it, I think, because you know the objects are all kind of mystic in origin. They're not really. It's not really technology. So.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, now we come to the part that everyone dreads, which is downsizing your collection.
I'll go out on a limb real quick and say I actually don't dread that very much.
Well, I know a lot of people do, and I do and I don't. And, mm-hmm. you know, there are some good reasons that you need to downsize. You're moving. Mm-hmm. Or your collection is growing so large that your significant other says, it's either that stuff or me. You know, not that happens that often, but, you know, I mean, it's like anything. It's like anything that you have a huge collection of, eventually you have to sometimes make a decision whether or not you want to keep it or not.
Yep.
And it's funny because especially when downsizing, the big thing is, I think this is why I like PDFs now, because I have an electronic format. I can put it on a drive. It takes up space on the drive, but it's not like, it's minuscule compared to everything else. It's like, I'm a big fan of having the main rule book for games and everything else, if possible, unless I use it a lot, in a PDF format.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, otherwise it's just stuff all over the place. And, you know, back in the day, that was the only way you could do it. You know, you'd have to have copies. And then the other thing too, it's like I have a lot of games that while I sort of collected them, it's like I don't play them. I just don't play them anymore. You know, so I mean that's actually a hard sell. People's like, do you reference it? Do you reference it ever? Like, for example, I have a bunch of Champion stuff. Do I ever reference any of that Champions or Hero Games stuff? The solid answer to that was no, never. So for me, the hard choice was that's something to get rid of. You know, just say, you know, bite the bullet, say, my God, I love the fact that I had this game, but and I have fond memories of the game, but outside of maybe keeping a main rule book and maybe a few supplement materials, what am I doing with the rest of this stuff? And it's sad because, you know, you spend a lot of money on all this stuff. And I think that's the other thing. It's like people go like, you know, and I get this in any other hobby, you know. I'm an amateur radio operator, so it's like you meet people who are like, well, I spent $150 on this radio. Yeah, that was like 20 years ago. What do you want for now? $150. No, that's not going to happen. I'll give you 40 for it, maybe, because I can spend $150 and buy a radio that does everything that one does and more. So there's like, you know, and of course, you know, there are people who say, well, this is an antique. Well, that's great. It's an antique. If I'm into antiquing, then okay, I'll get that. Otherwise, I'm going to get something else. And so I think that's the thing with gaming is that sometimes you, and I know people say blasphemy, but you know, you do. Sometimes you have to choose to downsize, choose what's important to you with your games. Like right now, again, I can already tell you, I got rid of my second edition AD&D rulebooks, my third edition AD&D rulebooks, my 3.5 AD&D or D&D rulebooks. I got rid of all those, you know, because if I'm going to play a 3.5-ish game, I'm going to end up playing Pathfinder, which I kept. And I kept my really horrible copies of first edition AD&D. Why? Because I'm never, as much as I wish I had my original rulebooks, I don't. I got these as like some really seriously someone used, I bought them at a used bookstore for like $1 a pop because they were just in horrible condition. And it's like, I need something to have my first edition. That's the only reason I have those. If I had my regular ones, I would toss these. I hate to say toss them in the trash, but pretty much that's all they're worth, you know, outside of the material. You know, the covers are horrible. Some guy took a pen and tried to color in some of the drawings. Ooh. And it's like, okay, I only have them because it's the only physical copies I have. It's okay.
Well, yeah, there's like three things that are, you got to think, double check before you downsize. If it was given to you by a loved one, if it was your first RPG, because, Jeff, do you still have your original Traveler books?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I kind of have the same mode when it comes to the first game. Like, I still have my red box. Because
I don't have my first red box. I wish I did, but I don't. And a lot of that is when I joined the military.
Yeah,
a lot of my games ended up in storage at my mom's, and somehow between getting out of the military and me getting my stuff back, they just disappeared.
That's fair.
You know,
and again, like you said, if you replace a book with a PDF, it's easier to get rid of.
Right. And I mean, you know, I mean, that's it. It's like, you know, my Dragon magazine collection, sadly, was just pretty much between all the moves I've had, the few magazines I had, they were just pretty much destroyed. The covers were destroyed. You know, they're not. So in other words, it's like it's not worth me trying to sell to somebody or give to somebody.
Yeah.
And I have the whole damn thing, all the PDFs, you know, from back when they had the CDs. I have the CDs. So I have the all two. It's like, well, geez, then I don't really need the Dragon magazines anymore.
Nope.
You know, and so that's it. I think that's the thing. I think PDFs have taken, you know, when you can get a PDF copy of a lot of stuff, you know, there's your reference material. You don't need to have the physical copy anymore. And I think that's one of the great things about the way technology has gotten. It's like you can have a huge PDF collection of stuff that you want for reference material. You don't need the physical copies anymore. I don't care what anyone says. Now, is there a certain visceral value to the physical copy? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, again, you know, there is that sentimental value. Is there something sentimental about this item? Then, yeah. Like, for example, Rollmaster. I will never play Rollmaster again, but I'm keeping a good chunk of my Rollmaster stuff because there's, even though I'll never play it again, there is certain sentimental value. Because I honestly, probably, in terms of the number of hours gamed, it's probably D&D first.
Mm-hmm.
Probably nowadays, Traveler second, and then Rollmaster.
Yeah.
I mean, I played a lot of Rollmaster, not the RMSS system, the original RM2 system. I mean, the RM2 system. So I'm not getting rid of. I get rid of like all my RMSS stuff because that stuff to me was useless. But the original RM2 stuff with all the supplements I had for it, I'm keeping all of those.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I use what I call a conceit. It's a game that, you know, I don't ever plan on playing, but I keep because I want to. I have the Red Dwarf role-playing game.
Nice.
I'm never going to play that. There's not really much point. The Red Dwarf, the attraction of Red Dwarf is the characters and the humor and stuff like that. Recreating that in an RPG setting is, yeah.
Okay. You need
you need the right group, and it's that's going to be hard to recreate more than once or twice.
Well, it's like I have the original FASA Star Trek RPG game. No one's ever going to play that.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I have it, and it's like, I'm not giving that up because, you know, it's always fun to look at the Kirk character sheet and see he has like a 99 luck or some bullshit like that.
Oh, man. So, you got to see Data stats. That's all I'm saying in the Next Gen book.
Yeah.
They're off the chart.
Yeah. So, and you know, I played, you know, honestly, that's one of those weird games that I had a group that we played a lot of Star Trek, although I think we ended up playing the Klingons.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
cause they're more fun.
Yeah, you know, and it was just like one of those things. It's like, you know, again, it's one of those games where you look at it and it's like, it doesn't make a lot of sense, really. But it was fun.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, but yeah, it's like, you know, so core rule books are one of those things that I definitely always say keep in a physical format if you can, because those are things you might use.
Yes.
There are certain things that I only own in PDF because, well, that's the only thing available. Like, for example, I have the Rule Cyclopedia.
Yeah.
Which, honestly, I suggest everyone actually buy the PDF of that. Because no other rule book has, like, sections for just about anything you can fucking think of.
Well, it's a compilation and an improvement on the original box sets. And it shows, and it's a work of art. Like, one of my biggest things on kicking up is I never picked it up back in the day, which is almost paradoxical to this topic.
But, at one point, I had two copies. I gave one of them away.
Yeah. So, I mean, if I had a physical copy of the Rule Cyclopedia, that would be great, but not going to happen, and I have other concerns.
Yeah. Actually, I see them on a semi-frequent basis. I don't know, for some reason, they seem to have become more common in the last couple years. I'm not sure why that is.
I think a lot of it's just people just, they're cycling out of people's collections.
Yeah.
Yeah, I suspect you're right.
Yeah.
You know, and so, you know, there's a lot of decisions that go into this. I mean, and I always tell people, don't be afraid to get rid of something just because you have an emotional attachment to it. Do you game it? Do you use it as a reference source? Do you use it as a source of inspiration? Because, you know, there are games that you own that you're never going to play.
Mm-hmm.
Or is it something so unique you will never get rid of?
Yeah.
And there are a few things like that. I mean, I'm going to tell you about a game that I will never play, period. And the read-through of the rules is horrible, but it's a game that I own that someone has told me doesn't actually exist.
Oh, I know where this is going. Go on, Jeff.
Oh, which one is it? Where is this going?
Certain Champion Supplement?
No. Although that's another one that I'm keeping.
Yeah.
That's one thing in the Champions box. I may take the 4th edition rules and a few, because I didn't really, I don't know, I might keep the Fred instead. But,
yeah,
you're talking about Wings of the Valkyrie.
Yep.
Which was the recall. They recalled it. So it's like, I actually have a copy of something that got recalled. So yeah, no, I'm not getting rid of that. No, this is another game, which ironically isn't the same line of thought. It was a game called Reichstar.
I think you mentioned that before, yeah.
Yeah. And the premise of the game is that Nazis won, and many, many years later, where there's almost like this cyberpunk and space travel, people are finally trying to rebel against the Third Reich.
Good luck with that.
Yeah. Again, completely horrible game in terms of the actual execution. And I bought it when I was a kid, believe it or not. You know, teenager, because it was out then. And someone actually told me, oh, that game doesn't exist. I'm holding a fucking physical copy, and it looks like it exists to me. You know. So, you know, there are those things. But the bigger question is, what to do with the stuff you decide you don't want? Because there's all sorts of reasons that you want to downsize. And I'm a big fan of, even if you don't downsize a lot, you should always go through your game collection to see what you don't use or what you're not needing. You know, A, my first and foremost thing that I can always say, talk to your friends. Find out if they want anything.
Yes.
And I'm going to say something here that people are going to be shocked at. Don't ask for money.
No.
Yeah.
Anything that you have that you're trying to really seriously get rid of, don't ask for money.
I the corollary to that is that just because you've owned something doesn't make it valuable. Prices on Amazon are not a good key to the value of something.
Amazon, eBay, whatever.
Yeah, exactly. So if you're asking $300 for your beat up copy of the first edition Monster Manual, that's the 9th printing, don't be surprised when no one bites.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, so there is
you
that.
You charge $8 for it. Yes. Yeah.
So that's something. I mean, and I only say that because, you know, can you get money for it? Sure. If so, like, for example, a friend of mine is going to come over tomorrow and get some of this stuff. And he's like, well, what do you want for it? It's like, you know what? I'm not asking you money. If you want to kick me some money, that's fine. I'm not worried about it. Because mm-hmm. to me, I paid money. And how much over money I paid for it, I've gotten my use out of it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like, I don't know. It's one of those things where I don't put money, a monetary value on anything. So there's that.
You think about it. You run 3 to 4 games with your average product, and it's already worth, you know, it's giving you more enjoyment than, say, a movie.
Yeah.
You know? And because of that, you got to figure out a way to say goodbye. And mm-hmm. another thing you can do is donate it. If there's a local convention that needs a door prize, here you go.
Well, that's it. You know, donate it to people. And that's what I mean. You know, donate it to people. The other thing, of course, is, like, for example, here we have, and I know they exist elsewhere, but we have, like, Bookmans.
Yeah.
Which is kind mm-hmm. of a, it's a used bookstore, sort of, now. I mean, they do a lot of other things, too. But,
yep.
you know, I took a lot of my other Champion stuff, and they took everything I owned.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
what
was that?
Oh, Half Price Books will do the same thing.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's not just sometimes, and the funny thing is sometimes they won't.
Mm-hmm.
That's what people, it's like, yeah, they won't. They won't do that. But it's like, okay, hey. You know, they took everything. I'm like, I'm good with that. You know, I took the store credit because I didn't really care about the money. It just gives me a whole bunch of, I mean, they gave me a lot of money in store credit for all that stuff, actually. And it's like, nice. I will never spend that money. It's like 150, I got like $150 in store credit.
Wait, it'd be good if anything ever catches your eye. Even if it's just
honestly, that's good for me because if we ever go there and we want puzzles, use puzzles, we're going to be in puzzled in heaven.
Exactly. Yes.
So I'm not worried about, you know, it's like, that was a good exchange. You know, so to me, it's like, oh, if they offered me $40 for it, I'd be like, okay, sure, $40. I want someone else to enjoy it.
Indeed.
You know, I've heard people have suggested, and I don't know, I think this depends on your library. Some people have suggest donating it to the library.
Talk to your librarians first.
Right.
Yeah.
That's a big one. It's like, you know, sometimes yes, sometimes no.
Yep. Ask them beforehand, before you bring it to the building. Just, you know, find a librarian and say, hey, would you guys be interested in this? Otherwise, it's just going to go on their big book sale at the end of the year, or, you know, every quarter, yeah. however often they have them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And even still, even if that was my last option after I've done everything, I'd be okay with that too.
Yeah. Well, if nothing else, it might get to somebody else who might be interested. And everybody bought their first gaming product once.
So, you know, I mean, and it's tough because, you know, there's lots of things that are easier to sell, to get sold than others. You know, I know some game stores try to sometimes take stuff and trade. It kind of depends. But I really, you know, again, I think, of course, you know, your friends network is your biggest one. Because, like, with all the stuff that I want to get rid of, right now I think about half of it is my friends said, oh, yeah, I'll be interested in that. I'll take that. I'm like, okay, mm-hmm. more power to you. I don't want it.
Yeah, and it's going to a happy home, for lack of a better term. Yeah.
It's like right now, the only thing that I think nobody wants is my Champion stuff.
Yeah, that's weird because, well, yeah, Champions was big back in the day. You know?
Well, again, I think it was mostly just the group that I have. It's like none of them have really been interested in Champions. That was a hard sell. And again, that's why I'm not going to be playing it.
Yeah, I can see that.
You know, again, I think I'm going to probably take like two or three things out of there. Out of that box, and that's what I'm keeping. I think I'm going to probably, I don't know if I'm going to keep the fourth edition rule book or the fifth edition rule book. I'm going to keep the Super Agent supplement. I'm going to obviously keep Wings of the Valkyrie, and I'm probably keeping the Strike Force supplement.
Okay.
I think, I think there's, you know, there's a lot of options for thinning down your collection. There's a lot of good reasons to thin down your collection too. You know, I know over the years I've made my collections kind of rotating and not got too attached to anything except for a few minor items, and, you know, games come and go, and you know, Shadowrun is still around nowadays, but it's still very much a product of the 90s. And so for me, getting that out of my collection wasn't a problem. And so that's kind of the approach I've adopted for now. And, you know, you add in PDFs for a lot of this stuff, and it's really super simple to just, you know, keep it reasonable without getting into hoarder mode.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's the big problem that people don't get, is that you really kind of have to not be a hoarder with these things. And it's tough not to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because again, much like a hoarder, we're kind of like, maybe we should be, you know, it's like, I don't know if have you guys ever watched the Hoarder TV show?
No.
Afraid not.
Oh, trust me. You watch that and you're like, I'm getting rid of shit.
Yeah,
I can imagine.
You know, and it's tough because, again, as human beings, we do get emotional attachment to items, whether it be our car, our computers, whatnot. And sometimes it's like, it's not rational thought. And I think that's what we get to with games sometimes, especially when we've played these games, so there's an emotional attachment to those games in a way that is beyond the logical. So,
I can see that.
You know, and again, if an item is bringing you joy still, then okay. But if an item is just sitting there and it doesn't really bring you joy, why do you have it?
Yeah. Right.
You know, there are people like, well, I'm a collector. I collect everything. Well, that's great. When you need a second house for your stuff, you probably have too much shit.
That's. I got two questions here. Yep. One, I've never been much of one, and this is actually the one place where I haven't had a problem with it. But do either one of you guys actually ever spend any time collecting, say, tactical maps and minis and all that? I know that we've discussed in the past how I don't think Jeff and I are basically not collecting the stuff because we really don't have anywhere to store it.
Yeah,
I'm in the same boat. And I realized probably about 10 years ago that miniatures were just, I was never going to paint them. And for a lot of the stuff I can do, I can just draw some X's on a piece of paper or in Roll20. And that was going to be good enough.
Yeah, I'm agreeing there, because what I did when I was running my miniatures game for the con is I found public domain pictures of cows and just built pogs for the characters, and then put on the other side a picture of a steak for when they got injured.
Yep.
Yeah, and I think that's it's one of those weird things where I think definitely with the printing technology the way it is, I think I'm actually at the point where it's like, I almost, if I know I'm going to need things, I almost prefer paper minis, and I will just print them out and cut them up and use those, because you know, that takes up like less space than any miniatures I'll ever own.
Yeah.
But,
and on top of that, if you really need it again, it's on your hard drive.
Right. You know, but it's interesting the fact that many, many years ago, and I think, I don't know if Steve Jackson still has them. I think you can still get them as PDFs. But Steve Jackson actually produced a line of cardboard minis, Cardboard Heroes.
Yeah.
Oh, yep.
Back in the day.
Yeah. I think they republished all of them in a set of books, and I bought it.
I think you're right.
And I had it for a while, but again, even that was so much storage that eventually a buddy of mine knew some gamers like in Eastern Europe that needed stuff, and we just dumped all that stuff in there and shipped it to them.
Nice.
Wow. Oh, he must have enjoyed it there, but like, I just, as much as I love to play, like, you know, Jeff, if I remember to serve me correctly, one of the things you love going to JevCon for was to see the build dioramas.
Oh, no.
Just the build up there, but
those guys are insane.
Yeah.
Beautiful, but insane. It's like all my, you know, like for example, right now I have a whole bunch of castle molds that are on permanent loan to somebody. Why? Because I don't have time to build, and I don't have the space to build, and I don't have the inclination anymore to build those things.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I got someone that says, oh, you should get those back. What the fuck am I going to do with them? I'm not building them.
Well, dude, you spend your entire life building a castle they're going to use for maybe 3 to 4 hours. And as awesome as it is, sometimes you got to put the toys away.
Yeah. And it's funny. I remember watching this weird documentary. It wasn't necessarily about RPG gamers. It was really more about miniature gamers. And those guys were insane about that. You know, it's like,
yeah.
One guy was like, oh, yeah, the wife's going to kill me, but I need to build this right now. What?
Yeah.
You know, or I built this pyramid and now I need to throw some sand on it to make it look right. It's like, really? And he's like going out in the middle of the night into, you know, his kid's sandbox to throw some sand because he has glue on the outside of this pyramid to throw sand on it.
And you're that's just a like, little insane.
Yeah. And you're just like, yeah, okay. You are fucking nuts. And again, we all get a little nutty. And I'm sure he was being a little more nutty than usual because he was on camera.
Yeah.
But,
well, it's the OCD.
What was that?
Well, it's the OCD that most gamers have.
Yeah. So,
otherwise, you wouldn't stop me in the first place.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, and that's it. It's like, you know, it is difficult to choose, you know. I mean, obviously, giving it away to me, I mean, if you want to sell it, great. You know, if you really want to do the eBay route and do all that, there's a lot of heartache and there's a lot of effort. Because I remember someone saying, they actually told me, it's like, well, don't take it to Bookman's. You can get better money for it on eBay. And it's not about the money. But, you know, if you want to do that, remember, you're going to spend money. You're going to spend time and effort posting each one of your items. You're going to deal with the auctions or whatever it is. You then have to collect the money, no matter how that is. Even if it's PayPal, you're still collecting the money. You have to pack it, ship it.
Yep. And shipping could kill your profits.
And even if you say, well, they have to pay shipping, who cares? That's still a lot of time and effort on your part.
Yeah.
And it's just like, it'd be one thing if you had only one or two items you're trying to get rid of. But if you're like me and you're trying to get rid of a couple of file boxes of stuff, yeah, that's not going to help. You're not going to do that unless you're, even if you try to sell it off as a lot, that is a lot of weight to ship.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the thing about people understand about, I don't even know if the post office has that anymore. They used to have fourth-rate shipping for, like, books.
Parcel, yep.
Yeah.
They still do have, you still can get media mail, but they have very specific restrictions on what you can and can't ship via there.
Right.
So.
Yeah. So, I mean, nowadays, of course, they do have that whole, at least in the U.S., they have this, if it fits in this box, it's this price, period. Okay, that's great.
Yeah.
You know. And I know a lot of people that do that, but it's still, I mean, there's a huge cost in all of that. So, again, it's not worth it to ship anywhere unless it's a couple items, it's not worth, it's not worth the time and effort, I don't think.
Yeah.
So, again, how much is too much? You know, I think that's the question for everyone when they think about downsizing. It's like, well, in my case, it's just one of those rules. But like, I'm moving. I want to have more space. You know, it's like, and hey, it might even be as simple as, hey, I need to get rid of stuff so I can get other stuff.
That's true.
You know,
and on top of that, if you do research and you're saying you're using it for research projects, keep an eye of how many times you have that research project right over there and how many times you go to the internet instead.
Well, again, that's why I'm saying PDFs are, you know, if honestly, a collection of PDFs is actually something easier to deal with. Granted, it's mitigate, you know, it's like, well, I have my collection, it's on the hard drive, it takes up space on my hard drive, but I'm like, well, that's still smaller than anything else, you know, and
yeah,
it's not any less valuable, you know, for research purposes or whatever. So,
just
a few thoughts,
but,
you know, and miniatures are, you know, the funny thing is you were talking about miniatures. If you have a collection of miniatures, those are even harder to get rid of in many ways.
Yes.
You know, especially you've already painted them,
mm-hmm.
you know, even if you haven't painted them, trying to get rid of them. And it's like, I love minis. I just find it's hard to, and even though I have a bag that I store some of that stuff in, it's still like, you know, dragging that around is tough.
Yeah.
You know, it's
well,
like, what was that? Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I was just going to make a joke. Basically, you want to have a friend who has the OCD and not you. So you can go over there and look at it whatever you want without having to deal with the transport or the weight or the space.
Yeah, and I mean,
it's 3 hours to set up.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, I know some people that enjoy painting miniatures, so that's like their ancillary hobby besides gaming. It's like, okay, that's fine. But I have a lot of hobbies, and I have to pare down what I how much I own for each hobby, because otherwise, you know, you can go insane. Like, you know, I'm an amateur radio operator. Well, I can only really own so much radio gear before that becomes ridiculous. You know, at some point when I get older, I'm going to have to choose only one or two hobbies to actually do stuff with. I know that sounds weird, but it's true. You have to choose.
We run out of energy.
Well, yeah, that, and it's just you run out of money.
That's the other part.
So, I don't know. I mean, I guess the question I pose to other people, is there anything that I've talked about downsizing? You know, what goes through your mind when you think about downsizing? I'm really curious. I wonder if other people besides yourselves have actually gone through downsizing. What was their thought process? What was their main criteria besides, you know, instead of having one book, you know, I want one bookcase instead of 12. You know, what was your other criteria? Like in my case, we're looking at possibly moving to a different place, and it's like, you know, you want to, I don't know. It's like anything else. Anytime you move, you want to get rid of stuff. So you know, cause you want new stuff at the new place, or you want to do things differently.
I think one of the things for me has been like a disenchantment with a game series or a game system. You end up collecting the first three or four books from a game system, and you finally get to play it, and you get it up to the table, and you're like,
this sucks.
this isn't great. I'm never going to play this again. We've played three sessions, and I know right now that I'll never touch this book again. And, you know, that's always a good option for going on the pile, as I say.
Yeah.
You know, another one is a bit, I think, redundancy. Sometimes, you know, you have nine different core rule books that all are on, you know, nine different core rule books about the zombie apocalypse.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Do I really need all of these? And so, yeah, I think that's one of them too.
All right.
Sounds tough indeed. Well,
all right. Well, why don't we go through the Kickstarters really fast and get the hell out of here. What do you guys say?
Okay.
Sounds like a plan.
All right. First up, Inkwell Ideas has magic item cards for 5th edition reference cards. I like kind of the idea. 14 days ago, he's reached his thing. Although, cards are kind of weird to me. I had some of the Pathfinder item cards, and after a while, you're just like, it's a great idea, but I don't really want to keep them around.
It's more stuff to clutter up the table. Yeah,
exactly.
Yep.
But I think it's cool for anyone that likes cards. I like the fact that he has a PDF of any deck you can get.
Yep, and that's only $2, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, and then you can get $10 for PDF and printed cards. I actually wish he would just have had a PDF only, besides the one $2 one.
Yeah.
That would have been nice.
But well, again.
Just, yeah. Still kind of cool. You know, you know, I mean, I like, again, it's kind of cool. I like the idea. I just don't think in practice I find them all that useful. Mm-hmm. There's something like this is good for a convention.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I can see that.
You know.
Yeah, well, then you place them down, you got these really cool special effects, and you pop them out after you print them off your printer, and bada bing, bada bam.
Yep.
You got this really cool gold-shaped thing with an eyeball.
But, all right. Yeah, so next Kickstarter, which is not doing very well.
No, it's not.
B-Horror.
Yeah.
The tabletop. I guess because there's a lot of games in this space, really. For one. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it has some potential. I'm just not sure where it really fits in, or, you know, when I first see it, I am immediately reminded of, there's a board game that fits this same exact thing. There's a couple card games also. So it's one of those things like, yeah, tough to, and it looks like they've got a long way to go for their goal and only 10 days to pull it off.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just thinking, what the hell is the name of that game? I own one.
Well, it looks neat, and it looks like a point-buy system, as far as I can tell. So I'd have to see there. Plus, I just want to verify the currency.
It's Mexican dollars.
Okay, that's what I just want to confirm. Sorry, I'm just not too terribly familiar with that.
Oh, I know the card game that I was thinking about for a B, kind of B-horror, B-adventure, B-whatever, is there was Cannibal Pygmies, and then there was the other one, which was, I forget what the real horror one was.
Yeah, there's a couple of them like that, yeah. And I feel like this kind of fits into that same area. I don't know how many, if I need an RPG for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nope, well, I get you.
Good luck to them, though.
No, we...
I wish them luck, but I have a feeling it's not going to happen.
Yep.
This one, actually, they reached their goal. They have 10 days to go still. NPCs for Hire, Heroes and Villains. Basically just illustrated stuff. You know, pictures for you to use. Which, again, I think they probably missed... I mean, they did a $20 for stuff that, and you have to pay shipping. I think I would have loved to see it more in terms of line of a PDF, but that's just me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but they did reach their goal, so obviously people are willing to buy it and like, okay.
Well,
so, okay, yeah. It's a deck of 52 cards. That's why, obviously you're buying it, but still, I think I would have still liked to have it as a PDF.
Well, again, you only need let's say you need a dozen. It's your game. It's easier to print off like a smack of... a page of NPCs and just sort of slap them out as you need them.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're... I don't want to subvert their Kickstarter, but you can also buy old CCG cards and use them the same way.
Yeah.
Okay, next up we have Seven Worlds, a realistic science fiction game for Savage Worlds. And they've actually reached their goal. They got about 9 days to go. So...
Here, let's look. So,
art looks good.
Yeah,
looks like they've put some work into it. So,
yeah, unlike apparently they're going to go to a 2D 3D mapping for their star maps, which that's pretty typical. That was one thing that the default rule set for Savage Worlds is like, you don't need a star map. But that goes in. That's in tune with the way they work. Sometimes depending on the game, it works for you or it doesn't. Like, for example, you guys ever play 2380?
No.
It was originally called Traveler 2300.
Okay.
The actual near star list for 50 light years. And, space travel was you could move up to 7.7 light years at a time. That was just some sort of weird rule conceit that they created.
Mm-hmm.
And man, was that a pain in the butt, because you're trying to figure out what stars are next to you, and it was kind of hard to do.
I can see that. Well, Jeff, you're our expert in Savage Worlds. At the last local con I was at a couple of weeks back, I finally got a chance to try Savage Worlds, and honestly, I'm impressed as all hell, because I was playing in a Rift's Savage Worlds game, and this is hitting a touch point of a similar niche now that I've had a chance to play the rules. It might be fun to play, your typical two-fisted heroes as long... Well, the big question is, how far can you go? And this is intriguing me immensely, but I'll have to think about it.
Yeah. I have obviously the Savage Worlds jump core setting with stuff, so it's like,
Oh, yeah.
So it's like...
Yeah. Is it scratch or itched? Or it's already scratched?
Although, honestly, I think the next time I run a Savage Worlds science fiction game, it's probably going to be using Savage Worlds with a lot of Traveler influence, because that's just the way I roll.
That's completely understandable. Traveler is a hell of a game and an easier rule set for Savage Worlds.
Speaking of Savage Worlds, there's another one that we have. We have, they've actually reached their goal. They still got 9 days to go. The Monster Hunters Club RPG for Savage Worlds. It's a setting for Savage Worlds about kids coming of age and fighting monsters in the 1980s. So, in many ways, I'm sure this is another offshoot from Stranger Things in a way.
Yes.
Monster Squad, the role-playing game.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, cool. Probably not a game I would play, but I like... I like the little the way they have the little, like, wannabe Atari 2600 with the little cartridge in it. Says the Monster Hunters. I just think that's funny.
I do like that immensely. I'd be interested to see if, well, actually, I'd be almost interested in seeing what they would try to do with a 4-bit console, but that's just a personal fetish.
Yeah. So the $15 gets you the PDF, which isn't too bad. I just can't afford to spend any money. And $30 gives you a softcover copy.
And they've hit their goal, too, so they're set to go.
Oh, yeah. No. So I like that. That's kind of cool. I'm going to skip that one.
Okay.
So we have Dark Naga confronting Haster for 5th edition. This is just an adventure for level 10 through 11 characters. They were actually asking for $2,000. They are up to $3,500. And I don't know. It's an adventure. I just like the fact that they, you know, obviously have Haster. That's funny.
I like the cover. It has a real, you know, module feel, like early 80s. Like, I just love the aesthetics.
No, I mean, it's just one of those things. I like the idea. So, you know, opposes the followers of a Lovecraftian old one. That's what you're trying to do. It's a non-linear adventure in classic sandbox style is what they say. So
we're talking like more Keep of the Borderlands here.
Yeah.
Now, note that it's also part 4.
Yeah, so there's other parts, which is like, okay, but...
Oh, so this is like the equivalent of Queen of the Spider Pips. Like, this is the... No, it's only 10-11.
Yeah, no,
so
I mean...
it's not a final thing. Like, I don't want to fight Haster at the best at times, much less a mid-level.
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm guessing the other three adventures cover other levels. I don't remember ever reading about this one.
Yeah.
But, hey, you know, still kind of cool.
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely.
Let's see, what do we got? Next, we have the Ravaged Wasteland of Crithford?
Crithforth?
Yeah. They were really only asking for $78, and they got like $1,000.
Well done.
The brutal RPG, brutal post-apocalyptic fantasy setting for a 5th edition game. So, you know, so it's kind of a fantasy post-apocalyptic game. I think we've seen a lot of these.
Yeah.
So nothing too amazing, but hey, you know, a few bucks. They were asking, what is this? Roughly $8 US for a PDF copy. That's not too bad for just something.
No, that's pretty good.
And then actually, I like the name of this one. Don't Look Back, Paranoia Conspiracy Horror Role-Playing Game. So, classic horror role-playing game.
I want to say I owned an original edition of this.
Right.
This is actually a reprint.
Right. And so I think that's kind of cool. $12 for the PDF. And then $35 for the full color paperback copy. So that's kind of cool. This is one, as we talk, it's only going to have a couple days once the episode's released. Aliens and Asteroids. It has not reached its goal. It's a few dollars short.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I like the name of it just because I think it's funny. You know, and they have that, you know, feel to it.
Yeah,
I think.
Well, you know what they're drawing on for sure. It's obviously Alien is one of their inspirations for sure.
Right. You know, Aliens, they say Starship Troopers and some other games. You know, mm-hmm. Babylon 5, The Expanse.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and, you know, obviously we know the person that created Brian Fitzpatrick.
Mm-hmm.
So. $10 for the PDF version and then $25 for the core rulebook. I mean, printed. Copy. So that's not too bad. You know, reasonable goal.
Yeah, this one is definitely hitting a touch point. I'm probably going to spec this one off just out of morbid curiosity.
Yeah. All right, three more to go. We have Castles of Crusade, Tomb of the Unclean. So if you're a Castles of Crusade person, there is, you know, kind of a...
Well, when you hear this, you'll have, like, maybe a couple of hours to back it, so you'll have to get right on top of that.
Oh, you mean the other one, yeah.
Or this one, too. This one's only got 25 hours to go.
Yeah.
Tome of the Unclean.
Yeah, you're probably...
It's tough. It's tough, mainly because these were supposed to be for last week, and, you know.
Yep.
I don't want to do them a disservice and not mention them.
Yep.
No. Well, basically, it'll drop. You got 3 hours if you get it, and Well, they made their goal for what it's worth, so yeah.
Nice cover art, though. I like that cover art.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, that's something else. That monster is brilliant.
Okay, here's one for you. This kind of ties into the topic you had. The Silence of Hollowind, urban fantasy RPG, where Hollowind is a metropolis rich with mysteries and contradictions, where magic is outlawed and whoever uses it is hunted down. They actually already reached their goal.
And it's available in Italian too, should you want that.
Yeah, the original price is all in euros, so yeah, they're over in Europe.
Yeah, and they got their own system where they basically spell fetch rules for the Savage Worlds conversion, so
yeah.
You know, if you're a Savage Worlds fan, they might have some specialized rules you might get a kick out of. And they do have a free download to give you the basic rules, the trial version. So you can give it a test drive before you buy for sure.
Yeah, which is really cool.
Yeah, I like this one. I like this one a lot.
Let's see. The
rule set that they're working off of.
So about $12 for, or not $12, about $14 US for the PDF versions. And then I don't think, I guess it's up there. You can eventually get a printed copy. But for something like this, this again is something I would just do PDF wise. Unless you're really into it.
Yeah.
And last up is Critical Hit and Fumble Dice. They're basically just modified D10s with some critical hit or fumble.
Yeah, they blew past their goal, though.
Yeah. And $10 for a set. They're kind of, they're a little bit on the big side, too. Mainly because I think they had to print that name on it.
Yeah, well, they have entire, basically 3 to 4 words on a side, so yeah.
So, there
that
we
looks,
go.
Oh. Yep.
And that is all the actual things. We should mention real quickly that obviously Bundle of Holding has the Old School Revival, has a whole bunch of OSR titles, and then there are 2 Castle and Crusade ones. So I would suggest you, if you're interested in any of that, I would suggest you'd go.
Yeah, you can clean up on Castle and Crusades here. So
Yeah.
Like, that's a game that I've heard a lot about, but I've never actually tried because, you know, fantasy niche, so to speak, and I kind of already have like 8 games on that.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. But I'm interested in hearing more about this game. So I don't know if any of our audience knows anything about Castle Crusades, let us know.
Yep. All right. And with that, we're going to say goodbye because I need to say if you need anything from us, go ahead and send us an email at info@rpgcircus.com. Go to our Facebook page, post something on the wall, you know, do whatever you want to do. And, I think, like I said, about 3 weeks we'll record something else. Any final comments before we go?
I don't think so.
Not really. All
right. With that, we'll see everyone in about 3 weeks. RPG Circus is released on a Creative Commons Attribution US License 3.0. For more information, please visit creativecommons.org.